fun. The party had just begun. The guests included Wolfman, Dracula, and his son. The scene was rocking, all were digging the sounds. Igor on chains, backed by his baying hounds. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five.
They played the match.
They played the monster match.
The monster match.
It was a graveyard smash.
They played the match.
It got on in a flash.
They played the match.
They played the monster mash. Out from his coffin, Drac's voice did ring. Seemed he was troubled by just one thing. Opened the lid and shook his fist and said, whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash.
The monster mash.
And it's a graveyard smash.
It's now the mash.
It's caught on in a flash.
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash. Now everything's cool, Drac's a part of the band, and my monster mash is the hit of the land. For you, the living, this mash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them Boris sent you.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
The monster mash.
And do my graveyard smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
Mash good. Easy, Igor, you impetuous young boy. Mash good.
Monster mash. Monster mash.
Sticky. to take a trip into oddness and obsolescence through a zone whose boundaries are that of imagination. Accompanying him on this journey is the mesmerizing sound of the twilight tone.
This brings us to the Story Corner portion of tonight's show with Radio Tale number 41, The Sweet Cold Smell of Indifference.
The smell of the cold takes me back. It is 1969, and we have driven a very long way to get to this place. When I see the massive brick building with its windows that are enclosed by bars, I want to run. Far. But I do not run, because there is nowhere to go. There is just me and this place and this moment. Along with my brother and two sisters, I pile out of the car. As I close the car door behind me, the dryness of the frozen ice that covers the door sticks to my mitten. I try to pull my mitten away from the door, but it sticks. My dad calls for me to hurry, and as I am released from the ice's sticky hold, I see that my dad and my siblings are at the entrance to the building. I run toward them, fast. As I follow my dad's lead out of the cold and into the building, I stop for a moment and look back at the car. I sense that something is there, but nothing is. Nothing that I can see, anyway. Even still, whatever I sense makes me shiver. I am promptly startled by a gust of wind that blows past me and am overcome by a creepy feeling of disdain. I look back at the car again. Again, I feel a tingle at the back of my neck. I shiver. Quickly, I hurry inside the building, tripping up the first few stairs, so that within moments I reached my brother and sisters. I am relieved. The wind can't get me now. The chill of the air has followed me, though. I feel it is all around me. No matter how tight I wrap my one-size-too-big coat around me, it can still get to me. And so, as we walk up this marble staircase that never seems to end, I realize that there is no space between me and this place that is not bitter cold. The stairs, the railings, and the walls of this stairwell have a hardness to them, an indifference that chills you to your bones. In this frosty winter morning air, as I climb my way up, I see my breath. We walk around and around and around, and we go up, up, up. And then we are there, at a door we cannot open. My dad knows what to do, though. He has been here before. He rings the bell, and then we wait. At the top of these stairs, where it is cold beyond cold, I ask my sister how long we have to wait, and I see my breath again. The echo of my voice surprises me. Not long, my sister tells me. Just wait. As we wait, this not long part is taking a very long time. My sister notices my impatience and scrunches up her face at me. I just shiver and put my hands down into my pockets. My sister notices that my scarf is hanging down one side and promptly pulls one side down and wraps it around my neck twice. Then she pulls my hat down over my head and pats my back. She smiles at me, a sort of half smile, but I know she wants to cry. When she sees that I see past the smile, she looks away. To be strong, I tell myself. The sound of the door unlocking is heard, and a nurse opens it to let us in. Once inside, she looks out at the staircase. I wonder, is she looking for the ghost? But she quickly locks the door and leads us down a long, long hallway. This corridor has a bitter chill to it. It is indifferent and unfeeling and does not console those who come here. It is hard and rough, but it is also strong and sturdy. So I know it can hold me safe in this place. I wonder if my mom feels safe. As we follow the nurse, I am drawn to the clinking of her keys. She is a heavy-set woman with short hair and big glasses. She is dressed in a white nurse's uniform and is wearing a sweater. I wonder if she is cold too. She says nothing to us. She is someone I don't think I would ever want to hug. I wonder if my mom thinks that too. As we walk in this silence, the only thing I hear is the clinking of the nurse's keys and the clicking of the shoes on the floor. I am sure that the people who live here are wondering whose shoes have come to visit. Just like the stairwell, this hallway is icy cold. We walk past doors that are locked and locked and locked. They all have bars and bars and bars, just like the windows outside. Everywhere I turn, there are sharp edges and no round corners. I feel like if I fell in this place, I would never stop falling. I don't think I feel safe after all. And I suspect that if I lived in this place, I would never get warm again. I wonder if my mom is warm. As I get closer to where I am going, I notice that this hallway is filled up with the smell of nothing. It is like the smell of an empty jar that reeks of something that you can't quite name. This place in its frigid embrace is the same. It is a jar that is filled to the brim with the distant bitter cold of indifference. I never knew that cold could smell like this, distant and yet all-encompassing. Empty and yet all-encompassing. It isn't like the cold of a wet, rainy day, nor is it like the cold of the snow falling from big, open skies. It isn't the cold of early morning, nor is it the cold of the chilled air after a long, hot bath. It isn't the cold that a fever brings, nor is it the cold of a breeze that rushes through an open door. Instead, it is a cold that stays in the memory and overtakes you. It is a cold that leaves you feeling alone and hopeless and wondering if you will ever unwrap yourself from the blanket so you can go back into the world and find your life again. It chills the bone. It breaks the spirit. And then it breaks your heart. Epilogue. I once thought that the smell of Essendale Psychiatric Hospital was a sterile smell. I thought of it as clean and complete. Today I see it differently, though. I see how it permeates a person's very sense of being and self-worth. That sterile quality that the psychiatric industry strives for, with its lack of color, flavor, and shape, is an attempt at controlling the people who live there. It renders them invisible. It also renders them hopeless, because if they can't be seen, how can they ever heal from the stories that got them locked up in the first place? For those who do buy into this invisibility, they are deemed rehabilitated to enter back into society. Those who do not are given more medication until they do. From the sterilization of people's personalities and the shock treatment that so often went with it, places such as Essendale never lose that sense of cold. When you go there, you get the chills, and you get goosebumps, and you get a shiver at the back of your neck. Go there, walk the land, you'll see. There is a presence there that indicates that something horrible happened there. The medical staff and the patients may not talk about what has gone on there, but those stories, nonetheless, are irreversible. They are in the walls. They are in the land. Some days, the psychiatric hospital took my mom so far away that it stole her whole life from her, and then it wrapped her in a blanket to keep out that cold. It was a cold that never quite went away, not even when she came home. It was a cold that she never, ever wanted to talk about. When I think about all the years that I went to visit my mom, I remember the ghost, and I remember the bars on the window of that old brick building. And for some reason, it makes me want to come home and wrap myself in a warm blanket and shut out the cold and shut out the world. And yet, it makes me want to come home and write about it and tell the story for my mom.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Arts Edge, and specifically for the Halloween show. As always, I leave you with one final tune. This song is from Jan and Dean's album, The Little Old Lady from Pasadena, and the tune, released in 1964 as a single, is none other than the title track, The Little Old Lady from Pasadena. Stay tuned to Wave Station coming up next. Have a wonderful, safe weekend, drive safely, and don't drink and drive. And tune in next week for more stories at The Arts Edge.
It's the little old lady from Pasadena.
The little old lady from Pasadena.
Go, granny, go, granny, go, granny, go.
Has a pretty little flower bed of white gardenias.
Go, granny, go, granny, go, granny, go.
But parked in a rickety old garage is a brand new shiny red super stock car.
And everybody saying that there's nobody meaner than the little old lady from Pasadena.
She drives me fast and she drives me hard.
She's the terror of Colorado Boulevard.
It's the little old lady from Pasadena.
If you see her on the street, don't try to choose her.
Did you know that cannabis was recently legalized in Canada? With this new legalization, the laws surrounding cannabis use and driving have also been affected. You have probably heard that cannabis use does not affect your driving, but that statement is a myth. Some of the effects cannabis has on a person driving are reduced alertness, altered perception of time and distance, and it also results in reduced ability to react to unexpected events on the road. We at Mothers Against Drunk Driving are here to keep impaired drivers off of the roads and to keep the people of our community safe.
Go to mad.ca to learn more about driving under the influence.
If you're a regular listener of this show or other shows on CJSF, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us about what you like and why you like it, as well as ways we can improve our programming. To leave comments, please email cjsfprog@sfu.ca or call 778-782-4423. This information can also be found on our website at www.cjsf.ca.
Did you know that cannabis was recently legalized in Canada? With this new legalization, the laws surrounding cannabis use and driving have also been affected. You have probably heard that cannabis use does not affect your driving, but that statement is a myth. Some of the effects cannabis has on a person driving are reduced alertness, altered perception of time and distance, and it also results in reduced ability to react to unexpected events on the road. We at Mothers Against Drunk Driving are here to keep impaired drivers off of the roads and to keep the people...